Hey, everyone. Do I have an awesome show for you guys tonight? The Natman and I did an awesome interview with paranormal investigator and content creator for She Haunts, Miss Gina Black. Edgegrave Dave reviews the Oscar-worthy horror comedy film Bad Milo and Haunted Antarctica. All that coming up for you right now, so let's get it.
Do aliens exist and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, Ghost fam. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Ghost Joe. If I sound a little bit weird, that's because I have a little something going on there up in the nasal cavities and throatal cavities or whatever. But either way, have a great, great show for you guys. The Natman and I had interviewed a paranormal investigator and content creator, Gina Black. But first, let's talk for a moment, shall we? At the time of this recording, no one still knows what these damn drones are, right? And who's controlling them. I'd like to believe that they're aliens, but I'd probably say that it's more likely our own government, which would probably answer the question of why they haven't shot these damn things down yet out of the sky. I mean, it kind of makes a little bit of sense, but I would love for it to honestly be aliens because I think that would be super cool. You know, listen, if they wanted to blow us up, they would have did it already, all right? But yeah, so that's what I'm thinking about that. What do you guys think? Let me know, just let me know. Email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com or leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744. I'd love to hear about it. And if you have any paranormal experiences that you'd like to share, definitely utilize that as well. You could do it anonymously if you'd like. Now let's talk about some paranormal news. Listen. I want you to hear the interview, okay? But I got to warm you up a little bit first, all right? But did you guys know that Antarctica is a crazy haunted place? I mean, me neither. The population there is only 1,300 crazy mofos braving the frigid temps, you know. But let's look into a few of these creepy, creepy, icy hauntings. So one place is called Ross Island, which is an island formed by four volcanoes. That's pretty cool. In the Ross Sea. In 1979, a plane claimed the lives of 257 people on Air New Zealand flight. When it crashed into Mount Erebus. The people of the crash are said to haunt the area. People have heard disembodied voices, whispers in the wind, and have even witnessed footprints being formed in the snow without any explanation, like out of nowhere, which I've never heard that before. That's pretty cool. So next is about the ghost ship Jenny. Go ahead, say it. I know you want to. Go ahead, I'll wait. So now that you've got that out of your system, this ship has apparently met its demise in 1823 after leaving from Peru. It was discovered in 1840 by a whaling ship with all of the bodies still frozen and preserved. That's pretty crazy. I'm sure it's super, super haunted over there as well. Now, have you heard of, you've all heard of Niagara Falls, right? I mean, everybody has. But how about Blood Falls? Have you guys ever heard of that? It's an outflow flowing from the Taylor Glacier in East Antarctica. The falls flow red due to iron oxide deficiency combined with the salt water. So, I mean, if I ever... Who the hell am I kidding? I'm never going to Antarctica. Are you? Are you ever going to Antarctica? I mean, maybe on one of those cruises. That might be cool, whatever. But I think that's Alaska. I don't think anybody goes to Antarctica. I mean, really, only 1,300 people there. How cool could the nightlife be over there, right? Let's talk about the Ninjin. It's a cryptid said to inhabit the icy waters of Antarctica, described as a humanoid creature resembling a giant white aquatic being. Reports of the Ninjin depicted as having a smooth, featureless body, long limbs, and a mermaid-like tail. Witnesses claim to have seen the Ninjin while aboard ships or during research expeditions, often describing encounters with the creature as surreal and otherworldly. The Ninjin is typically associated with the various urban legends and folklore, and its existence remains unverified by scientific evidence. The concept of the Ninjin taps into the themes of the unknown and the mystery surrounding unexplored regions of the world, particularly in the harsh and remote environment, Antarctica. As with many cryptids, the Ninjin has captured the imagination of enthusiasts and remains a subject of intrigue and speculation. And I guess we're never going to see it because I'm never going to Antarctica. But actually, some people have said that you actually can see it on Google Earth. So we're going to have to check that out, shall we? But, you know, listen, without further delay, let's get into the interview, shall we?
So with us today is Gina Black. She's a paranormal investigator living in South Florida, co-founder of Afterlife All-Stars, and content creator of She Haunts on various social media platforms. With her ghost hunting equipment, open mind, and critical eye, she investigates dwellings looking for signs of the paranormal.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing, Gina? Thanks for
Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. Thank you so much. So how did you get interested in the paranormal?
So I grew up in upstate New York, and we always used to tell scary stories around our fireplace in the winter. So, I kind of really came to love the storytelling aspect of ghost stories and things like that. And, you know, when I moved to Florida, my family moved into a home that we quickly realized was haunted. So those stories kind of came to life for me a little bit. And while living in that house, I experienced a lot of different kinds of paranormal activity, and it really sort of sparked my interest in the paranormal and kind of pushed me towards researching it more and seeing how other people's experience affected them and, you know, how they were coping and handling that. And, you know, it kind of led me to being an investigator where I am today.
Nice. Actually, I live in, well, I don't know if you'd consider it upstate right now, but I'm in upstate New York, or, you know, we used to live in Staten Island. So, you know, anything above Staten Island was upstate to us. But, now I'm actually in, now I'm in upper Westchester, beginning of Putnam County area. Yeah. Yeah. Like Yorktown Heights area of New York.
I lived in Rockland area. We were actually very close to Letchworth Village, if anybody knows that through paranormal research. That was still open when I lived there. That's how old I am. And now that it's become kind of like a hot spot for paranormal investigators, I am just so jealous because I grew up by that. And now I have FOMO because I can't go investigate myself.
Where in Florida do you live?
I live in South Florida, very close to Fort Lauderdale area.
Yeah, I've lived in the Tampa area for a while. And actually,
Denver is cool.
The Halloween scene there was actually really good there. Freaked me out, actually, because I thought it was a lot better than the New York scene. Our first Halloween there was extreme amount of kids walking around the neighborhood and a lot of people decorated. It was actually pretty cooler.
When did you start getting involved in like organized investigations and doing the Afterlife All-Stars? When did that start?
So I started, I would say, getting a little bit more serious about investigating around 2017, 2018. I got a couple of ghost hunting equipment tools and I started, you know, seeking out more places to investigate. And the more I did that, I started meeting more like-minded people. And I landed up meeting in South Florida my co-founder of the Afterlife All-Stars. His name is Tim Arnwine. And he was looking to start a new team. So we got together and, you know, we were in a team before, and then we started the Afterlife All-Stars together. And it's just so much fun. And it's great working with him too, because he's been doing it a lot longer than I have. He's been investigating for 20 plus years. And, you know, his knowledge has been really cool to, you know, have in my life. And he's written a few books, and, you know, he's just so amazing when we have guests and people that come to investigate with our team, because we host events. He's just, you know, he's great with that. And I when it came to starting the team, it was just a very natural, you know, progression. We met a bunch of like-minded people, other investigators, and we teamed up, and everybody kind of brings their unique flavor to the group. You know, we have some people that are really great with using a spirit box, some people that are more, you know, versed with, you know, working with EVPs and recording, and everybody together really complements, you know, one another. So it's fun.
Now, do you guys do like residential, commercial, abandoned places? Like what do you guys mainly focus on? Or do you kind of do like a little bit of everything?
We do a little bit of everything. I would say the main focus of the group is actually researching. You know, when we got together, we really wanted to focus on different types of experiments and different ways that we could experiment. And we do that through a variety of different types of investigations. So we do seek out haunted locations, places like hotels, prisons, hospitals, you know, you name it, homes, businesses that are known for paranormal activity. Sometimes people do contact us to come and experiment. You know, we don't really discuss too much when it comes to that kind of thing, only because it's in a lot of cases, it's a private investigation, but we do have them every once in a while. And we also do events with our local historical society in Fort Lauderdale. We host regular events where it's actually a fundraiser for them. And what we do is we have something called Paranormal Boot Camp, and we teach the guests how to use the equipment, and then they join us on an actual investigation. It's not really a ghost tour or anything like that. And that's really fun. And it's, you know, it's a great way to get visibility for our museum and to raise some money for them. So we do that too. And, you know, we kind of try to get a variety of places under our belt because it's fun to try new things. So we're always looking.
When you do investigations, I guess pretty much like residential, I guess it would be, do you try to just give answers, or do you try, like, if somebody's like, listen, you got to help me try and get rid of this thing, do you try and like help with that, you know, or is it just basically the research?
Well, it's more of the research, I would say. What we really strive for is to validate their experiences and also help them with possible ways to work around the situation. A lot of times when you have a haunting, especially in a residential or a business, it might just be somebody that was connected to that property that just wants to be acknowledged. And once they're acknowledged and they're treated with respect, then a lot of times the issues do die down because maybe that's all they wanted was to just feel like their space was being shared and respected. But we don't do any sort of home clearing or anything like that. We're just researchers. But what we have done for some people is to validate their experiences, to show them that they're not crazy. We've captured things along the lines of EVP or electronic voice phenomena in recordings. And we've captured different light anomalies. We've captured shadow people, you know, moving around. So at least we can show these folks that have reached out that they, in fact, are having a legitimate experience. But we really haven't had anybody that's contacted us with anything very negative. So I would say, but in that kind of situation, we really would just be able to provide the evidence.
So you've never actually dealt with poltergeist?
Not a poltergeist. I've never seen anything like that. But we have been in places that have reported poltergeist activity, but it's never happened in front of our eyes where anything's moved or anything like that.
What's the most memorable investigation that you've conducted?
Memorable is a broad word, but I would say, you know, kind of...
right. Well, that's why I said it like that. You know, I don't want to say what's the most evil or the most scary or, you know, what's the most memorable. Oh, yeah. You know?
So, you know, what's an interesting investigation for me was I was in Savannah, Georgia. This was a couple years ago. And I was investigating the Sorrel Weed House. I'm not sure if you are familiar with it, but it was on pretty much every ghost hunting show. It's been on Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, and it's been on all kinds of other things. And it was actually the house in Forrest Gump where they drop the feather at the top of the roof and it kind of floats down. Wow. It's a famous house, and it basically has a lot of rich history because when it first came into be, the foundation was actually used as a Revolutionary War barracks. And then that foundation was converted into a home. And then it became, you know, added on to, and it became, you know, eventually it became this really nice mansion. And in, you know, the family that's famous for living there, you know, in the later years was the Sorrel Weed family. And that house was home to a doctor who did a lot of shady experiments in the basement. And also there was a famous story of how he was cheating on his wife with an enslaved woman. And he was caught cheating on his wife and she caught them. And the wife basically just walked upstairs and threw herself off the roof. There was no explanation, no note, no nothing. She just walked up and just, you know, she jumped off. And then very shortly thereafter, the enslaved woman who was found with the husband was found in her living quarters hanging from a noose. And the story, it sounds like fiction. It sounds like a movie, but it really happened. And there are a lot of restless spirits in that home. So when I visited, I was there on a Saturday night and I was only with two other people and my husband, and we got through the whole house. Nothing was going on. You know, it was very quiet. And then we got to the carriage house, which was where the enslaved quarters were. And this building, we were told by the docent, was a happy space. This was where everybody would relax after a long day of work. They would cook together, clean, sing. It was a nice place for them to be. They enjoyed being there. And she said, hey, if you're up here investigating, just keep it light. You know, don't ask any doom and gloom questions. Just, you know, just be respectful and just be, you know, ask anything that might be happy or lighthearted. So we're up there and we're running out of questions to ask. And I asked my husband, I said, hey, like maybe you could sing a song because he's a musician. And he's like, what do you want me to sing? I don't know. I'm on the spot. And I said, why don't you sing Blue Suede Shoes by Elvis? Because that's always one of my favorite songs that he sings. So he started singing this song, and almost immediately we got responses through the spirit box. Wow. We heard what sounded like a woman singing. And then we heard it sounded like an older man say, I don't trust him. And then immediately what sounded like a child said, he's okay. Hmm. And it was just this really cool interaction because we heard singing, and then we had someone thinking like, I don't know who they are. I don't know if I trust them in my space. And then someone else was saying, you know, confirming, hey, they are all right. You know, I think they're okay.
Wow.
And it was very powerful, you know? So for me, that was a very memorable experience. And I hope to someday be able to go back there and see if we can, you know, experiment a little bit more in that space. And if they might even remember us, I don't know.
Is there anywhere that you can hear any of these EVPs? The public?
We I have it actually on a recording. It was coming through a spirit box device.
What would you say is like the most important, like ghost hunting, you know, piece of equipment?
That is always a good question. And my answer does change sometimes depending on my mood, but I would say top three might be a good way for me to answer that. At least three things, because if you have just one piece of equipment, it might be easy to get a false positive. But if you have two or three pieces of equipment and they're all interacting with you, that might be a better way of, you know, being able to verify that there was a valid situation. So I would say the three things I would bring would be an EMF detector of some kind. The kind that I use measures EMF and temperature. So I can see if a temperature drops, and I can also see electromagnetic field activity. And a recorder is great. If you don't have a recorder, you can always pop out your phone, and you can, you know, Apple and Android have great voice memo apps, which have, you know, the phone microphone is very sensitive. So it's great for EVPs, or a recorder is nice too. And I also recently have been using flashlights, believe it or not, on investigations. If you have a flashlight, like a mag light, the type where you kind of twist the top, if you twist the top just so that it's barely not touching the battery connection, you know, just so that if you give the little tap, it'll turn it on and off. And you can ask questions using the flashlight, because equipment, in my opinion, for a lot of spirits looks foreign. You know, it looks foreign to people in this day and age, but it definitely looks foreign for people that might have lived 100+ years ago. But a flashlight might be a little bit easier to wrap their brains around, you know, hey, what is this? And I've gotten some incredible responses for intelligent responses on a flashlight. So I would say those three things are kind of my top recommendations. And you don't really have to spend any money at all necessarily to have them, or not very much money at all. You know, if you don't have an EMF reader, these things are pretty cheap. So it's kind of neat. You know, if anybody wants to get started, it doesn't need to be a very expensive endeavor.
So I noticed that you, this is actually like, when I saw your Instagram and I saw this stuff, I'm like, oh, now I definitely have to interview you. I saw that you you went to go visit my guy Robert the Doll at the East Martello Museum.
Oh yeah.
how was that experience? Yeah. Was it did you get any like weird vibes, or was it just like how was that?
So I have a hot take on Robert the Doll. This is my hot take. Okay, so I have been investigating for years now, and I don't claim to have any psychic abilities. I really don't. But the more you investigate, you do become sensitive in a way where if you're in a room and something, the vibe feels off, your body is an antenna, your body will sense things. And it's kind of learning how to read those vibes. You know, you become used to doing that as an investigator. So when I arrived, I was expecting this heavy situation. I'm going, oh man, you know, I'm so worried about this. I was nervous because of all the stories and all the hype. And I got there and I honestly did not feel any negative energy. And, you know, we were speaking with our guide, who was really nice. We had a very small group that was there to investigate that night. There was only maybe three other people other than me and my husband. And we were talking to the guide, and he's been there for years. And we're like, hey, what is your opinion? You know, what do you have to say about this? And he did mention that, and this was as of November 18th, that the museum has recently changed their policy. And in previous years, from having this doll, they always told people, you have to ask permission before you take a picture of the doll. But they have started to, at least, you know, enough to change their policy, decided that by asking permission, you might be asking or giving yourself, maybe giving yourself a little bit too much over to the doll. Maybe by doing that, you're kind of lowering your guard a little bit, or offering the doll to, you know, give you some bad intentions. But they said that they've recently changed their policy and they don't want people asking permission. But what they said to do was to simply just be respectful. And the people that have these curses that happen to them, and these bad events and these negative things, are all people that were antagonistic, that disrespected the doll, that were taunting the doll, that were basically being jerks. And those people are the ones that come back to the museum and apologize. Those people are the ones that come back to the museum or mail in letters of apology. And I think it all boils down to, if you go into a space, you need to conduct yourself in a positive way. And if you put out that kind of negative energy, you're going to get it back, and it shouldn't be a surprise. You know? So I think there are people that they hear these stories and they go to that museum and they say, well, this isn't real, and I'm going to, you know, this stupid doll, and, you know, this is dumb, and blah, blah, blah. Those are the people that have the negative experiences. So, you know, it's not really how I operate. So, you know, when I got there and I didn't feel anything negative, I was very respectful. You know, we did some experimenting in there. We basically, they gave us full reign of the property during this investigation. So we didn't really have anybody in there. And, you know, we were, you know, asking some questions, not getting a whole lot of response. But then I took out one of my pieces of equipment that I have is called a portal. And basically the portal, it works with a spirit box. And normally a spirit box is really loud and hard to hear because you're listening to radio stations sweeping at a rapid pace. And it creates like a ch-ch-ch-ch kind of sound, like a white noise. So this device actually lowers that white noise. It stretches the words a little bit so they're easier to hear. So it kind of just, it makes the experience a little bit easier to understand if you're hearing any words. So we had that on, and I said something to the effect of, you know, hey, Robert, you know, my husband doesn't believe in any of this. Can you give us a sign that you're here? And I said, you know, I think you're really cool. I believe in this. I think you're a cool guy. And we heard a giggle. Wow. And it was really neat. It sounded like a child giggle. And then I was using they're glowing dowsing rods, so you can see them in the dark. And I was shifting through the different colors, and I'm like, hey, Robert, what colors do you like? And when I landed on red, it said red. Wow. through the portal.
That's very cool.
So I'm like, all right, that's all cool. I got. I got a red and I got a giggle. And it kind of, you know, it seemed like it was an interaction that was intelligent,
that's so cool.
But that's all we got. And, you know, I think that is definitely a very haunted doll. And I think that anybody who goes should absolutely approach it with respect. And if you're not willing to be respectful, you should definitely, you know, brace yourself for the bad luck that's going to happen. Cause I do think that is a real
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. I mean, when,
you know, because I had read up on it also after I saw that on your Instagram, and I was like, you know, not giving any, you know, any kind of like disingenuous, like, you know, like non-validity to the doll being haunted, because I definitely believe it is, you know, but my thought was, oh, well, you know, maybe the museum is getting, you know, a lot of lawsuits or something like that from people saying, well, I did all this, or, you know, I didn't do this, or I did this, and, you know, now I have all these curses on me and everything. So, you know, for me, looking at it, I'm like, well, maybe it's just kind of the museum trying to, you know, cover itself legally, you know, as far as that goes. But, I mean, I remember there was a special about Robert the Doll, I think last year, I think on Sci-Fi or something like that. It was really, really interesting about the origin of it stuff.
It's got a wild story. Yeah. And I'll be very honest with you. I don't know if I believe a lot of the stuff that's said about the history of the doll, because some of it just seems absolutely ridiculous. It seems like, you know, if you've ever seen the movie Chucky, that's what a lot of the paranormal accounts from the past sound like. You know, the doll came to life and locked me in a closet and all this other stuff. Right. I don't know if I believe that. I do think a lot of things were embellished, but I think wherever there is smoke, there's fire. And I do think that if a doll for 125 years has had paranormal occurrences happening around it, I do think that there's something to that. And you know, it could be a variety of different reasons what causes it, but I do think something is, you know, there is something weird with that doll. And, you know, what was interesting, I know you mentioned this special. Did you see on the special that you saw anything about Ozzy Osbourne having an issue with it?
No, I don't think so.
No?
No.
I've heard of that. I didn't watch the special, but I think I saw a commercial for it. And they mentioned Ozzy.
Yeah, they were telling us at the docent that was with us that night, you know, that worked for the museum. He was saying how he recently went to a Paracon and he met Jack Osbourne, Ozzy's son, who has the show Portals to Hell. Right. And he was very interested in speaking with this docent because, you know, when he found out he was working at that museum, and he said, hey, my dad visited Robert and my dad wasn't very respectful. And then almost immediately after Ozzy left the location, all these bad things started happening to him. And he absolutely believes that because of the way that he treated the doll, that he experienced curse activity. Like, he thinks that he was cursed.
Wow.
So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely interesting. Cool. And actually, I believe that, you know, you mentioned Chucky. I believe that they actually said that Chucky was kind of based off of Robert the Doll, I think. I think that's kind of like where they got the whole story or the whole idea from, you know. That's what I had read. I don't know how true that is, but yeah, no, definitely a very, very cool thing. I mean, the Annabelle story is pretty interesting too. To be honest with you, I've actually never seen, I mean, I'm a huge horror fan, but I've never seen any of the Annabelle movies. Cause I'm like,
really?
I don't know. Cause it just looks, yeah, I don't know.
Like,
I just never
didn't see the Annabelle movies.
I love The Conjuring, but I didn't see the Annabelle movies, and I didn't see the Nun movies either. I just kind of watched.
I just watched the Nun movies.
Yeah,
The Nun movies are good, but they're definitely over the top, ridiculous. You know.
Yeah, those were more movies. They really made it like a regular horror movie. The Annabelle doll movies, I think the first two were pretty good. I'm not sure about the last two. They made, I think there was four of them, right? I mean, the one where they actually involved the real Annabelle in it at the end, that was actually pretty cool. You mentioned something about psychic ability. Does your group actually use mediums or anything like that?
We do not. We do not have any mediums, no. And I'm very skeptical of mediums. So personally, it would have to be somebody,
next question.
Somebody who really, really blew my socks off, because unfortunately there are a lot of people that claim to be mediums, and there's really I don't believe everybody that says that they're a medium is actual. And I think a lot of people claim to do that and they make money off of it, and you know, it's just hard, because you know, a lot of people go to see mediums to, you know, for a variety of reasons. And I feel like with the fact that there are so many frauds out there, that it's just hard to trust it. And I went to a place called Casadega, which is a spiritualist camp in just outside of Orlando. And this was maybe like 2 years ago. And it's a town full of psychics. And I went to someone and the entire reading just felt so fake. And, you know, she's looking at me to get a rise and, oh, I think someone's coming through and it seems like it's a female. And then she looks at me and, oh, I'm seeing a nurse hat. Do you know anybody who's a nurse? You know, it's just, it just seems so fake. And I don't know. I'm just so skeptical of it. But if I meet someone at some point doing this that seems legit, I would love to work with them. But I just, you know, when it comes to experimenting, I think that it's so important to have a multifaceted approach to experimenting, you know, not just to lock yourself into a routine, you know, always to try new things. So if that were a possibility of getting a legit medium, I would do it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way too about it. I mean, I sound like a broken record on all my shows because I pretty much say that a lot about how I feel like there's more charlatans than there are real psychics. I do believe that there are real psychics out there, real mediums out there, but I feel like they wouldn't be the ones that would be charging $300 an hour or whatever, you know, whatever it is, you know. My dad had people like, he'd be in the grocery store and somebody would come up and say, oh, do you know so-and-so? You know, that I just want to let you know that this happened or that happened, or they want you to know this. I feel like those people are more real, you know, like, because it just comes out.
They're not asking for
money. They just come out of nowhere and they're just like, hey, you know, I got this message. I just wanted to let you know, you know. But yeah, I mean, especially the ones that were always on TV, you know, Sylvia Brown, John, and I was a huge fan of John Edwards, you know, until I found out that they give questionnaires before people go into the studio audience. You know, I'm like, well, if they give questionnaires, obviously they're going to know, you know, it asks them who they want to contact and stuff like that. I said, wow, so John Edwards is even staged, you know, that kind of hurt my feelings a little bit because I wanted to believe that guy, you know, because he just seemed like a genuine guy. But yeah, no, I definitely have the same feeling about psychics and mediums and stuff.
You know, and another thing too is when you're seeing these people on TV, what makes it even harder to believe is you know what goes into a TV show, whether they claim that it's live or they claim that it's, you know, happening in front of you or not. It's heavily edited. It's heavily vetted. You have so much that goes into the production of it, and nobody is going to produce a show that's going to be a dud. They're not going to purposely just throw somebody on a stage and just be like, oh, hopefully this works out. They're going to pick someone that they know is going to give them the content that they want. And that's where it's hard to believe the stuff on TV. I think that, you know, maybe a person, I've heard of stories where psychics, you know, help find bodies and people that are lost and stuff like that. You know, that to me is more interesting than the people that have these shows that, you know, reach out to the crowd and, you know.
Me and a friend of mine had met Sebastian Bach years back, a lot of years ago. And we had asked him because he was on John Edward, you know, crossing over John Edwards. And stupid me, like, you know, I'm a musician. You would think I would ask him a musician question, you know. And I said to him, I said, was the John Edwards thing real? You know, and Sebastian Bach goes, well, who's as real as it could be? I'm like, okay, that kind of answers my question, you know. But
yeah, so exactly.
When did you start creating content for She Haunts? How long has that been going on?
I don't know the exact when I exactly started it. Maybe about 2 years, 2.5 years, maybe a little longer, but it's around that. I've been a content creator though on Instagram with a variety of accounts, and so before this, I was really focusing on a small business that was crystals and kind of witchy stuff, and I really got into, you know, making videos and stuff for my products, and you know, with algorithm and pandemic and all kinds of stuff, you know, I wasn't selling as much online, and I really didn't want to do it anymore, so I kind of like backed off of that. And I decided to start this because I said, you know what, this is the one thing I'm really passionate about. I was kind of afraid to start it at first because I really thought people were going to think I'm crazy. I don't really tell the average person when I meet them, you know, I don't tell my coworkers, I don't tell, you know, everybody what I do. But I felt like, you know, I was nervous at first to do it because I figured everyone was going to think I was nuts. And then I really met a very cool community of people and a lot of really, really great other investigators, paranormal enthusiasts, you know, people that are into it. And it's just been a really cool experience. You know, of course, with everything, you know, anything on Instagram or TikTok, there's going to be a little drama at some point. But, you know, I think overall it's been very positive and I really like it.
Yeah. I mean, how cool is the people in the paranormal community? I mean, I've met some really, really great people. And it's funny because, you know, like you said, people think, oh, this person's crazy and stuff. I've met some of the most down to earth people that I've ever met in my life in the paranormal community, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's been cool for me too. Like I really, you know, enjoy the people that I've interacted with and stuff with that. So yeah, definitely enjoy that. So let me ask you this. If money was no object and you could do a paranormal investigation anywhere, where would that be?
Okay, so I think what I would do if money was no object would be to somehow get the Winchester Mansion for a week and just do an overnight situation for a week and just experiment my butt off and try to get to as many rooms as I could and just really, you know, see what I can experience, because that has always been a very fascinating location. I've never been, but I've seen a million shows about it. I've seen, you know, I've watched YouTube videos and podcasts and you name it. I love the history behind that. And I just think it would be such a cool place to have a really good amount of time to really sink my teeth in and really, you know, explore. So that would be my choice. It's a good question.
Oh, thank you. No, I mean, that's cool though, because it's always kind of fascinated me too. Like the whole story behind it and how, you know, she was always scared that all these spirits are coming at her. So she would build all these fake rooms and, you know, false staircases going everywhere and stuff like that. It's just, you know, it's
beautiful too. You know, in addition to being like a little eccentric, if you look at the details of that house, it's gigantic. And there was no expense spared with the decorating, and for a Victorian era, you know, mansion, I mean, every little detail, she's even got like these little like metal spider webs in the corners of the hallways and like just gorgeous stained glass. And I mean, the amount of money and time that went into that place, it's a work of art. It really is. And it's an eccentric work of art.
If anybody wanted to contact you or find out more information, how could they do that?
So I prefer, if you want to email me, shehauntsofficial@gmail.com, or you can reach out to my Instagram, send me a message at shehaunts. I love connecting with other people in the paranormal world. And if anybody also has any questions, I do run a blog on investigating and tools that you can use to investigate. And I actually have an article about a bunch of ghost hunting equipment on Amazon under $20 and how you can use it. So if anybody has any sort of questions along those lines, please let me know. I love to share this stuff with anybody who will listen. So definitely reach out.
Well, thank you so, so much for, you know, for talking to us, and really appreciate you taking your time out of your day and to be on our humble podcast here. So thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much to Gina Black for helping us out with this interview. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you. And please, if anybody wants to know more about her, I encourage you to please check out our show notes. I have all of her links there, regarding She Haunts and the Afterlife All-Stars. So please, please, please check it out. Check out all of her social media stuff. Also, it's awesome. You're going to love it. And she has some really, really cool stuff on there, blog, merch, all that stuff. So definitely check it out. You're going to like that a lot. Now, on to some horrible reviews.
Horrible reviews with Edgegrave David.
Okay. Bad Milo. Bad Milo. Bad Milo. Huh. Okay. Hey, guys. Edgegrave Dave here. And I could assure you that I'm not yelling at you. I just want to make sure that I am pronouncing the movie that we will be discussing's name correctly, as it's B-A-D, bed, Milo, M-I-L-O, exclamation mark. Because after all, an exclamation mark creates excitement and exclamation, right? So, spoiler alert, and thank you, Ghost Joe, we will be discussing 2013's Bad Milo. And by the way, ironically, it is one day removed from the date that it did have its limited theatrical release. So here we go, Lo. With all the crazy movies that we've seen over the years, I was expecting the unexpected. And that is exactly what I got with this movie. It could have been anything from a really twisted, crazy, scary horror film to a comedy to who knows what. With a title like that, it's something that I never heard of. It did have a very limited release, as we said. But man, when I saw the cast of characters that were in this movie, I just couldn't believe it. We actually have a pretty star-studded cast here. We have Ken Marino. We have Jillian Jacobs, Patrick Warburton. And I remember him from those crazy car commercials. He has just done so much stuff. Peter Stomare, that was in Fargo. Stephen Root, remember? Milton from Office Space? Yeah, my stapler. And it's also worth mentioning that Ken Marino was in those Babysitter movies. He plays Duncan, the main character. He was also in Hoodwinked. And Patrick Warburton was also in Hoodwinked. And I mention that because it's an animated Little Red Riding Hood mystery movie. And it's one of my wife's favorites. But ironically, they were both in this movie. And to have Stephen Root in there too, I mean, oh man. And we also have a member of the cast that was both in King of the Hill and Family Guy. I mean, this just has comedy written all over it, especially from these actors. But I got to tell you, this is one of the craziest movies that I've seen in a while. But one thing that I wasn't expecting is, without telling you how many streaming services that I have, this is definitely one service that I did not have. And I only found it on Prime Video's another subscription channel, which is Monsters and Nightmares. So just for this occasion, I do have a 7-day trial. At the time of this recording, we'll see what happens. Will I keep it? We'll see what happens. But man, it seems like these subscriptions are just popping up everywhere. Good entertainment is just hard to be streamlined and streaming these days. So, okay. Major spoiler alert here. All right. Our main character here, Duncan, has some problems. Guys, we've all been there, and it's pretty relatable to myself. You know, you have crazy work, you have stress, you have a lot of things going on, and all of a sudden you get a little rumble in the tummy. Is it time to break out the Pepto? Is it time to break out some stomach medicine? All of a sudden, you're running to the bathroom and you're thinking about things, and then boom, an alien pops out of your ass. I can't believe that. Yeah, that's exactly what this movie is about. This poor guy has so much stress that he's been dealing with stomach issues for years. And you know what? There's a little cross between E.T., Mac, and me type alien or demon. He really is advertised as a demon, but when you see this thing's face covered in poop and in blood, and he comes out and he is a part of him. Now, you could say to yourself that you're going to be scared shitless. Well, believe me when I tell you, the interesting part is the human element of this movie. Though it comes out and there are deaths and it does kill people, we find out from a hypnotherapist that he has to bond with it. And it's just the wildest thing. On one hand, you kind of feel bad for this guy, but we mentioned Office Space before. It has like Office Space comedic acting where he works for an accountant firm and his boss makes him all of a sudden out of nowhere the human resources manager, where he just has to fire people every single day. And his office is, of course, in the bathroom, which is the common theme. And when he goes to the bathroom, his wife is like, is this like one of those 5 minute things or like a half an hour thing? I think some of us might be able to relate to that. And the whole point of the movie is he has to be able to control his emotions, because the people that he is stressed out over, oh, Milo gonna try to get him. And there are some pretty crazy brutal scenes in this movie. There's not a ton of them, but they are definitely there and they pay off in dividends. But the comedic acting, the dialogue of this, I thought I was watching maybe something for 2 seconds, like an Office Space meets like American Pie or even Seinfeld. And yes, there's a Seinfeld cast member that was on the show here too. So it just all works very, very well. And you find out Stephen Root, who plays Duncan's father, well, let's just say Milo kind of runs in the family. And he has one of these things too. And when they're fighting each other, oh man, it is just crazy. This movie is just going to have you rolling. It's just going to have you kind of like cracking up. And then it's just going to have you shocked at some of the kills that it has. And it has a pretty fitting ending, actually. So all in all, I was highly entertained by this little movie. And it really does pay off in a very big way. I think that you're really going to enjoy it. I have to thank Ghost Joe for this one because he did recommend it. And it's just a movie that before streaming was really a big thing. It was a direct-to-video release. Sometimes, guys, the most hidden gems are the ones that you will find direct-to-video. So go ahead. Check out Bad Milo. I don't even know what to even rate this thing. Part of me wants to give it a 5 out of 5 grave just for being so ridiculously poopful awesome. Another part of me wants to give it a 2 out of 5, 1 out of 5. It's almost unrateable because it's just that crazy. And the fact that they made something like this and that it was thought of, I mean, what an original idea. Now, the human element, do we all have a Milo inside of us? The next time that you get stressed out and you're kind of running for that TP and you want to make sure that you're working out all of your demons, well, you better watch out because there just might be one inside of you and you got to control your emotions. So see, horror films do teach you life lessons. There you go. And you can have more life lessons on the Warp Reality Paranormal Podcast. So back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thank you for that awesome, horrible review. As usual, Edgegrave, I knew he was going to have fun with that one. I just knew it because, to be honest with you, I actually haven't seen the movie. I just saw the trailer and it looked so insane and ridiculous. I had actually gotten that suggestion from somebody at work, which if I remember correctly, the person at work, I would never have expected them to give me this suggestion. So that was pretty awesome. And but I'm so happy you had a lot of fun with that one. I busted out laughing the first time I heard his review on it also. So that's going to do it for this episode while I'm holding back a cough right now. And so thank you so much to Gina Black from She Haunts and Afterlife All-Stars. You're awesome. Can't wait to do it again. And please check out all of our links in the show notes. And thank you, of course, to my buddy Edgegrave Dave for the awesome review. So that's it for everybody. And we'll talk to you guys on the Christmas episode later.
Thank you for listening to the Warp Reality Podcast. And thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warprealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or WarpRealityPodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.